In this month's very special programme, Pipes, Electronics, Pops and Classics, and all brought to you courtesy of the maestro himself, Hector Oliveira. Last month, I travelled over to Dorset to attend a special concert which had been organised by David and Linda Stanley, who run the Wessex Organ World Society. They and a capacity-packed auditorium of around 250 members from the society and surrounding area clubs enjoyed a truly musical, sound and visionary experience in the company of Hector Oliveira, who was making his one and only UK appearance. Prior to the show, he happily allowed me an interview, and I took the opportunity to recall that his early musical background, which began when he was but 3 years of age, was that of the classics and church music. Yet, on his very first LP, he's found seated at a Hammond X66 at Conley's Motor Inn near Pittsburgh. So, how did that all come about?
I was to replace another organist that was legendary on his own.
Would it be Leroy Lewis?
And Leroy Lewis was at that time was going to the shore to play with the same system that he had. And I had a cone organ in those days. But the cone organ just wasn't doing what the people really wanted to hear. And everybody says, oh, you just need to get the Hammond X66. And there was a whole club of people, the audience, that everybody owned Hammond X66. And in those days, it was quite pricey, $14,000 or something like that.
Yeah.
We're talking about 1970, 71, something like that. And so that was the organ, my first organ that I actually truly purchased. And
was that your first professional engagement as such?
On a steady basis, yes. Of course, I had already played so many concerts, electronics and pipes. But at that time, that was the first engagement. Then it was like 5 days a week.
What was Connolly's?
It was a restaurant with an Irish pub. And I was on the side of the restaurant, so the people pay a cover charge and came in to have a drink and a good time. And way back in those days, I was already tinkering with synthesizers. That was the very beginning of the synthesizers. In fact, it's ironic now that I work and design stuff for Roland, because the Hammond X66 didn't have a rhythm machine. And I bought my first Roland product then. It was called the TR-77. And I have it, and Mr. Kakehashi signed it for me. So I still have it. When I sold my X66, I kept that unit. And to me, it brings a lot of memories now, that the famous rhythm unit from Roland. Thank you.
So was that the first turning point that made you take an interest in theatre organ?
Yes, because in those days, don't forget that before the Hammond I had a con, and through the con I got to know the theatre organs, and through the theatre organs, the electronic ones, I got to know a dealer, and the dealer says, oh, if you really like this, you should really listen to the real McCoy, which was the pipe organ. Of course, I didn't know what I was listening, but the first chord captivated me, and I will never forget that, because it was the sound of an Antrim diapason, and it was the tune Have You Met Miss Jones, and it was a Buddy Call. And that is what really hooked me into the theater organ way back in those days. I'm not too sure if I would have heard somebody else like the famous legendary George Wright or other things with the Kinnurets and the TBS then later around. I don't know if that would really kept my attention. The TBS already was such a departure from what I knew. But the Antrim diapason and the strings, I say, well, those strings sound like a French cavalier call. And that Antrim diapason, I think I like this.
Thank you.
Well, I first met you after you did a concert at the Senate Theatre in Detroit, and that was going back to 1977. And I must confess, I'd never even heard of you up until that point. Your performance there, it just sort of blew me away, so much so that when I got back home, I pushed hard for you to appear at Manchester for the then international festivals. Now, what do you remember about those days?
I do remember very much that instrument. I loved it so much. It was actually tied up somehow remotely. I don't know if you remember this, and I don't know if the plaque is still there, but I believe either the post horn or the trumpet, something was gave to the theater, to the organ, from Peters, which is Pittsburgh Association of Theater Organ, and there was a big plaque on a 1977 trip that they made from Pittsburgh for one of those conventions, and they donated the money for. And I can't remember if it was the brass trumpet or the French or the post horn. And so somehow I was remotely connected to that instrument.
Well, it's fair to say you've been coming back to the United Kingdom ever since, but these days we don't get to hear you on the theatre organ anymore. Have you actually forsaken it, or?
No. In reality, I got tired of going to the clubs, and two things would happen. First, the shiny chrome screws on the console and 45 coats of varnish and shellac with a whole bunch of dead notes on, and you had to put whole ensembles, because if you played with just a tibia alone or an oboe alone or a quintadena alone, there was dead notes, and I always couldn't believe it, and the console was so beautiful, but nobody had bothered to work on the. I remember the Detroit Fox,
yeah.
The first time I played, and 2 weeks before they called me to say, look, we need to fix things for you. What do you want, the 32-foot working, the combination action, or the rest of the Bombard division? And I says, well, that's a real bad choice in there. Of course, I want the combination action. Oh, okay, well, and then we got to give up and abandon on the 30. And I, so these kind of things really got me tired. Of course, in those days, I remember Eric
Hansel.
His name. Yes, he took care, and he always had a white smock. And I remember him very well. He kept that organ in Manchester like a watch, you know, like a pocket watch. And I remember that, but the rest of the organs around the country were not that way. And it was meant to be used in another way. I wanted to play solo stuff, you know, used to classical organ. That was one thing. The other thing is, oh, don't play too much classic. And well, my background was classic, and even though I tinker a little bit on Buddy Cole and a few imitations of George Wright or something, really I wanted to play Vidor and Bach and those things. And of course, it went well at the Manchester Free Trade Hall, but that was a very special crowd too,
yes,
that came into those festivals and those days. In fact, I remember doing those festivals as a joint effort between the RCCO and the theatre organ.
And of course they were sponsored by the wine company, Noilly Pratt.
And I remember my first LP that had the label Noilly Pratt at the beginning,
yes,
sitting on the floor of the Manchester
Town Hall
with, among all the bees, because the bees was the sign
of Manchester,
the working bee.
That's right, yeah.
I never forgot that.
Thank you. Now, I've got most of your LPs in my collection, but there's one that always sticks out in my mind because you must have loved it so much that years later you went back and made a CD recording. So what was special about the Mighty Moller in the Fox in Atlanta?
Again, an instrument that lends itself to very orchestral music and especially classical or orchestral classical. And you can still throw the tibias and play anything you wanted in that instrument. My love has always been either straight classical music or orchestral. And this is perhaps why I fit so well with electronic machine like the Roland. I like that orchestral thing. I like to the crash cymbals and the tubas and the French horns. And you know, I didn't know too much what to do with a theater organ, because I was looking for synthetic strings, as in a synthesizer. Of course, there is no such a thing. So then you have to start using tibias in combinations with the tremulas. I didn't want to use that. So I discovered that the Moller had very peculiar things, and I could do way out. Like, I did some strange pieces of music, and they are not associated at all with the theater organ crowd. And yet I did, I think, I can't remember whether it was Babs Led already in that CD or everything is coming up, Roser or That's Entertainment, I don't know, whatever. I had three openers in those days, and that's all I could do. Babs Led, That's Entertainment, or Everything is Coming Up, Roses. And that's it. And as the years passed by, I kept That's Entertainment, and that was the ending of it.
I'll tell you now, that CD cost me 500 quid.
Wow.
Because it was done in quadraphonic sound, and I hadn't got an amplifier, and I hadn't got the surround sound speakers to play it, so I had to go out and buy all this. And the thing that absolutely to this day still makes the hair stick up on the back of my neck is the opening track from that CD, when you get the soundtrack of the film ending, the huge tabs closing and muffling the sound temporarily, and then you hit the Mighty Moller.
So long, Tony! So long! Sucker. Fool kid, where do you think you're going?
With you.
Then come on. We'll be right back.
That is, without doubt, the most thrilling and imaginative opening to any CD that I've ever heard.
It was always a pleasure to go back in there. And then, consequently, my love for the classical music, I was invited several times. One time, Virgil Fox, which is, he was dying in those days. And I went in last minute to replace him to do the Saint-Saëns Symphony. And he was going to do some solos, so I did some solos. In fact, I should not say my famous rendition, but people have made it famous, the Trolley Song. It was actually born in one of those concerts as an improvisation. And then I heard my own recording, and I kind of perfected it. Well, obviously, I still play that for the AGO, they all go bonkers.
Yeah.
Because of the fuse and the Bach, and there is a lot of musical jokes in there. Yeah. Now, the Mighty Molly was always, I had always my heart in three instruments. One was the Mighty Mo, the other one was the Rochester Wurlitzer, the 22-422,
yeah.
And the other one was Dickinson Auditorium and the high
Kimball.
School, the Kimball, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Those were my three instruments that I prefer to play.
Let's move on to the present, and in doing so, I'm going to take something you said when I first interviewed you back in the late 70s. You said that if he were alive today, Johann Sebastian Bach, you felt, would have embraced the theatre organ. If that were so, what do you think he would have made of today's Roland instruments that you play?
I think he would have embraced all of this technology. He was a little stubborn man. Now, we know this from the fact that the first time they show him the piano, he wasn't too keen on. And so let's not just be so fast into saying, oh yeah, he would take the synthesizer and go to town. But I like to believe that the kind of person that he was and what he did with the music, then he would have embraced the modern technology. So therefore, the electronic organ, MIDI, all of this stuff, God knows what he would have composed.
Oh. Now, I saw you literally 12 months ago in Germany when you were doing the O-Key Festival there. Now, you made a point of telling the audience that everything that they were about to hear was produced with just your two hands and feet. Now, how important is it for you personally to play without any disc files or other playing aids?
It is important to me because, after all, in my capacity as a classical organist, I grew up to play things far more complicated than all of this other stuff than I really do now in the electronic machine. And I could do that with just two hands and two feet, so why not use the same technology and play it the orchestral instrument in that way? I mean, if it's good enough for me to play a Prelude and Fugue by Marcel Dupré, I certainly can take I Love Paris or Rhapsody in Blue and do it live too, you know. I think the tracks, or as my good friend Tony Fenelon calls it, the backing tracks, we have discussed before that in our eagerness to grow quickly a new repertoire, we feel that we run out of time to perfect with 10 fingers and 2 feet, and then we start recurring to extra things like a drum or an extra string line and so forth. And in reality, we both agree with Tony that as the time goes by, we can now do it all by ourselves. And then why did we do that at the very beginning? Well, we ran out of time. We were under pressure. Japan, a new concert, a new tour. Let's work on a new song. You see what I'm trying?
Yeah.
Scheherazade was one of my things that I did not too long ago, which is unfortunately not on CD yet. And I began by saying, well, I can have the backing tracks do this and the cymbals and the tambourines and maybe this chorus on the brass, who, you know, nobody will notice. I'm still doing it myself. No, I will notice. Yeah. I will notice. I have to do this alone. And so I take a pride at doing that.
Would you like to see more artists putting aside the use of MIDI files? Because after all, the audiences are not stupid. They can see when there's more going on than is actually being played.
Yes, on the other hand, that also bothers me because a lot of stuff that I do, if the public is not well educated into how the Roland Atelier works, could also be misinterpreted as, well, this is being pre-recorded, and they do not know that my thumb and the left hand played that tambourine or that Christ cymbal. Yeah. Or then the right foot has something else than the left foot doesn't. And so if you do not know the things, I can fall into that category. Well, is he really playing all this? So let's just say that I say that. I don't want to attack the ones that do that. I believe on the use of tracks. And I'll be honest with you right now, I will tell you for all your listeners, there is a piece that I played that is very heavily sequenced, and that is the ending of The Pines of Rome. It's almost impossible for a human being, even if I had two more hands, to play everything that is going on at once. Now, I could have been satisfied and do a version that was allowed to do with two hands and two feet. I wanted to have everything. I wanted to have that last note on the French horn that people won't even hear it, but I hear it. And so I did recure. And if you ever see me playing that thing, you will realize very quickly that there are certain parts that I'm not playing, and it's coming from a sequence. And I don't mind telling the people when that's about to happen, just so that they believe me when that does not happen, to also believe me that, no, this is all me.
Thank you.
soon after you came onto the circuit, everyone, and I mean everyone, was talking about the famous flight of the bumblebee in which you demonstrated the amazing footwork of yours. Now, in the past few years, I've seen a number of your contemporaries doing it. Did it become a bit of a millstone around your neck to become known as the bumblebee man? Or?
Yes, and I have, in a very degrading way, have referred to the piece as a circus piece. The thing is that the people really are taken by that, and it's okay. I'm not going to take that away from them. And I now started to do it again in the last 2 or 3 years. I went back to it because why fight what it's already been established? I only wish if the people would understand that when I play Fugue Leggero of Bach or one of my the Preludes and Fugue of Dupré or something like that, it's so far more complicated than the flight of the bumblebee. And so what I do lately is playing it faster. So I go and check in YouTube to see who is doing it. And that person, that girl that plays that, then I'm going to have to do it twice as fast. And then I don't mind if they compare it. Yeah, but look at the speed that I'm doing it with. You know, that's it.
But at Manchester, you were playing Fly to the Bumblebee on the pedals and Tico Tico on the manuals.
Yes.
I mean, I've never, ever seen anybody do that.
I used to get crazy with an improvisation that went to nowhere sometimes. Or again, sometimes it was unbelievable. It depends how I felt that night. But that's how the whole thing began about Tico Tico. And now I continue doing that in the electronic organ. And this is why I always started with Tico Tico and the samba rhythm then continues through the flight of the bumblebee. Bah.
But when I first saw you in concert, you struck me as being someone who was having an immense amount of fun playing the organ. And that fun comes across to the audience. How important is that for you?
It is. I never woke up one morning that I didn't want to play a note of music. I have never played a concert, even in bad instruments. No, let's not say bad instruments, but it's instruments that were not up to par or that I was not too much in love. Even electronic organs, occasionally the sound system is not where it really should be or should have been. People don't know. I do because I heard it before at the optimum situation. But I never, it's like, well, yeah, let's... I have some friends of mine who have indicated, collect a check and leave town. No, I can't do that. I never play it that way. I never will play that way.
No. Now, your lovely wife, Levy, can't be here today, but you're not the only talented one in the marriage, are you?
No, she is extremely talented too. Well, not only all the stuff that she does for me, which is totally indispensable with... But she wrote a book, she has her aspirations too, she does her things. And yes, she is an extremely talented girl. We joked about her. Fortunately, she doesn't do music, otherwise I don't know how this will be taken. But she does other things, but she has a tremendous talent.
Thank you.
Are you involved with the research and development side on the Roland instruments?
Yes, on the Roland and the Rajes. In fact, it is a little known secret now, but it's expanding that I had my design in this little new instrument called the C330, which eventually is going to be unveiled as another number. But it has created a concept for an instrument. I created a concept for an instrument that was never done before. And then you will now see other people trying to copy, and it's Roland Rajes itself are going. The concept is very simple. It's just based on the technology of the good old Roland Atelier, where you have extra buttons with an unlimited amount of sounds from a general menu. And so even though the organ looks so innocent, with like a Baroque organ, inside it there's all kinds of 32s and string selectors, even tibias.
In whatever amount of spare time that you have between flying around the world to play concerts, what do you like to do in your spare time?
I haven't done it now for quite a few years, but it's model railroad. It's always been my passion, yeah, model railroad. And I have a little Z gauge, which is the tiniest of it, and which I wanted to make grow, but in the last 5 years, it's impossible. It's impossible.
Any plans for any more DVDs or new recordings?
Yes, I am now getting into a lot of classical instruments, and I just did a pipe organ recording and a Ruffari organ in Kansas City, which is an instrument to die for, and I'm planning to do more. I am also planning to release a DVD with multi-camera, but I like to do a nice job of showing not just my hands and the face, but the pipes and the church and so forth. The typical thing that you see on YouTube, but it just about everybody has but me.
Yeah.
You know, it's just ironic, if I may add in here, because there is half a dozen or so musicians in YouTube that have been invited, have been lucky enough to be invited to play Notre Dame Cathedral. And they always put their little snippets. We all have to sign a clause. Then that recording will never be put in YouTube or in Facebook or anything like that. It's very clearly specified. All these guys have done it. I didn't. So I'm the only one abiding by the rule. And one of these days I'm going to say, well, forget it, and I'm going to release. Because after all, I do have my whole recording, a DVD of that concert, you know. So expect to see it someday on YouTube.
Well, finally, Hector, I dread to think how many passports you've gone through on all your travels and all the organs you've played. Is there one organ or more than one organ that you dream about playing but you've never been invited?
Yes, and I don't know if you probably won't believe it, but Truro Cathedral has always been an instrument that I want to get my hands on. I mean, I have already gotten my hands on Royal Albert Hall and Westminster Abbey and Chester Cathedral and York and so forth. Truro Cathedral is one of those instruments and I would die to have my hands on that Willis.
Because it's the only Father Willis, yes, apparently, that has never, yes, been altered in any way.
Yeah. I would treasure to go and play that instrument. Maybe someday, you never know.
Hector Oliveira, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Alan.
Well, as listeners to these shows of mine will know, I don't usually devote a whole edition to one artist, but even an hour isn't long enough to cover the life, times and music of Hector Oliveira. But I hope you've enjoyed his candid comments and the music tracks that I chose to go with them. Until next month then, with thanks to Hector and the Wessex Organ World Society, this is yours truly, Alan Ashton, saying bye for now.
Organ First Radio is produced and presented by Alan Ashton, with technical direction by Ian King.